This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
This is Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Every week, speaker, consultant Mark Amtower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. Amtower Off-Center with your host, Mark Amtower.
Welcome to Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. I have two guests today. One in studio, Ray Bjorklund, founder of Birch Grove Consulting, and editor and journalist Wyatt Cash with us on the phone. Gentlemen, welcome and thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
And good morning.
Ray, let's start with you. Give us a little bit of background. I think most people in the market know about Fed sources and Deltek, but tell us, run through it real quick.
Well, I started out as a child.
There you go.
My career was mostly in the military, 26 years in the military as a program manager, as a budget officer, worked in a lot of technology programs, learned a lot about purchasing, a lot about procurement, and a lot about the government side of the table. And when I left the government, I went to Fed Sources, which is now part of Deltek, and there I was consulting companies who were on the other side of the table from the government, and spent a lot of time learning, you know, how companies think, and providing them context as to how the government thinks.
Okay. And now Birch Grove.
Now Birch Grove, yes.
And you are available for consulting on kind of big picture stuff?
Big picture. More strategic than tactical, but I certainly can help in many areas of tactics, mm-hmm. or how to approach the government, how to approach the marketplace. But I like to take a bigger picture, you know, a longer run type of picture, and be able to forecast what's going to happen over the next 1, 2, 3 years, so companies can really make better decisions about what course of action they're going to be taking.
Okay. Wyatt, same thing. Background, you and I met when you first came into the government market as editor of Government Computer News.
That's right. That goes back to about 2004. That was when the Government Computer News was part of the Washington Post Tech Media Group, later purchased by 1105 Media. I was editorial director there, and was fortunate enough to supervise a really talented staff of journalists that knew their way around Capitol Hill, a lot of agencies, and but focusing specifically on technology issues. And of course, they've evolved pretty dramatically in the time since. I was there for a number of years, and then about 2 years ago, got a call one day from AOL asking me to help them start a new venture, a business-to-business media platform with some fairly advanced social media tools underneath it. And we started a site in the government sector, the defense sector, and the energy sector that used primarily a lot of social media to reach out to executive audiences. So they recently made a strategic decision to sell those businesses. So I'm now out looking at a number of interesting opportunities and helping organizations in principle look at content management and content marketing strategies.
So we have a big picture context guy with Ray and a content guy with Wyatt. And what we're going to be talking about today are how we meld these things so the contracting world can absorb the big picture information and understand where to go, and hopefully produce some relevant content along the way and determine which content is valid. Let's start with what the hot trends are. Ray, do you want to start there?
Sure. We, you know, of course, read a lot in the media. We hear a lot, even on the radio, about what's happening in trends in this particular marketplace. while a lot of the organizations that I've been associated with are more into technology, the I can speak in broader trends as to what's happening in the government, and I think that that's useful because, again, that's part of that context. So in that very broad sense of what's happening, we're under some really tight budgetary constraints. And that not only is affecting IT, even though IT, quote unquote, is going up as a market, but there's so many pressures going on elsewhere in the government as to how they operate. It's really causing the government agencies to have to pick and choose as to what they want to do, to prioritize. And companies need to understand that it isn't just the steady stream of revenue that they were enjoying during the run-up after 2011, to 2011, after 9/11. It wasn't just that run-up. We're now in this really difficult time of austerity. And I know Wyatt can speak to a lot of the technology types of initiatives and trends, and I'll defer to him on that.
Wyatt?
Well, I think the key shift that is impacting the market now and is getting some traction at last is the federal government, and specifically the CIO Council and Chief Information Officer Steve Van Roekel's push for a shift towards a shared service model. As you know, traditionally IT has been looked at as a capital asset that requires a lot of advanced funding. It's always been complicated because IT has rarely been neatly fit into a calendar or fiscal year when it comes to investment. It's traditionally a multi-year project, and it's really made it hard to be efficient. And so while we've been certainly following many of the reports of trying to break big projects into smaller, more agile units, and trying to also accommodate rapid changes in technology, most notably with mobile. And I'll take a pause for a second to just simply note that it was really 3 years ago this month, April 3rd, that Apple introduced the iPad, and it's been remarkable to see how dramatically the shift towards mobile computing has gained traction, and the sort of shift as well towards the workers demanding more and more technology improvements and not waiting necessarily for the IT departments. So we have a lot of forces at work. But the solution, or the direction at any rate, of addressing that is trying to move agencies and their IT spending more towards delivering services to employees than building assets. And the CIO Council released on April 16th, in fact, their latest Federal Shared Services Implementation Guide on how to do that. One would like to think we're further along, actually, than what's here, but this still represents a good start in how to get agencies to look at the technology solutions that they have, how to stop duplicating so much of it and share it, but most fundamentally, look at it as a delivered service, not as an IT asset that sort of conjures the pictures of server huggers, et cetera.
Yeah, well, I don't know how quick the government moves. I've always referred to it more as a glacier. it is what it is, right? I mean, it can't move that quickly. We're going to take our first break, but when we come back, I want to talk to Ray about what you implied there about chunking things down, because I still think that the big picture, the end, has to be in mind. So with that said, you're listening to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, back after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guests today are Wyatt Cash, editor and journalist, and Ray Bjorklund, who is a number-crunching brainiac, all things contracts for government. Rayman, This is what I want from you right now. Wyatt said we want to chunk down the pieces, which makes sense, but you still have to keep the big picture in mind, right?
Absolutely, and that's part of that context that I was talking about in the previous segment. And while there have been many initiatives, I'd say several key initiatives over the last even 15 years on IT governance, that IT governance doesn't always get down to that working level. And Wyatt brought up a very intriguing dynamic that has been happening where there is a lot of demand from the worker bees who have embraced mobile technology and they're pushing that up. But getting that governance, the concept of being able to do shared services and to have common assets and even have one agency serve another agency in areas like HR or financial management, it's been always a very rough road to travel. And I've been hearing even recently there have been some agencies that have taken to heart the concept of more centralized governance of IT and have received so much resistance from the bureaus, the sub-agencies, that it's caused, political difficulties, among the very senior people that are involved in some of those situations. So this is really it's a tough thing to do. It's certainly a smart thing to do. It's the right thing to do, as Wyatt's been talking about. But it's just very difficult to take on the culture.
Okay, but let's factor in a couple other things here, along with the budget constraints, et cetera. We've had a push for a long while now to do strategic sourcing, fixed price contracting, and that sort of thing. How do these issues impact the acquisition of technology, and what are your clients doing, Ray, to address those?
Well, to the notion, as you call it, chunking up, some of those shared services, some of the shared acquisition, some of the shared programs, are, again, a pretty smart way to go, but there is a lot of resistance to it. And you take the notion of strategic sourcing across the government, say, well, could we put all of PCs on one contract? And, well, possibly, but then you have other dynamics because some agencies have some unique needs that need to be served. Can you write a contract that's universal that serves all those agencies? And then you take it even beyond that and you look at the socioeconomic requirements that the government has to meet in its contracting. You say, well, are small businesses getting their fair share of this one big chunked up type of contract? So there are many, many types of dynamics that are going to play into it when you're talking about an enterprise of the scale of the U.S. federal government.
Okay, Wyatt, do you have a thought there?
Well, I do believe that GSA has been at least a positive force in trying to alter and foster better contracts to facilitate more agile project development. I know not everyone would agree it's working yet, but certainly over time we're seeing that the ability to have the acquisition vehicles and acquisition officers up to speed and being able to handle these sort of bite-sized development projects has been both an inhibitor to the progress but a necessary ingredient to moving forward on it. I think it's always taking longer than we'd like, but I think the agencies understand the critical nature that acquisition plays in getting technology delivered faster so that we're not dealing with two or three generations of older technology while the private sector is dealing with just-in-time advances. And that's certainly something the government would need. I think they're closing the gap on that. I think they're also, in some ways, able to have a positive impact because they have a certain amount of buying clout So they are in a stronger position in many ways. It's just that they need to move past some of these larger scale initiatives into more disciplined, smaller acquisition programs to be able to take advantage of that.
Okay. But, you know, the smaller acquisition programs are going to demand more from the 1102 force. And near as I can tell, they're pretty maxed right now.
Well, that's certainly the irony and the difficulty of trying to see where technology could be a way to get more done with less, as we so often hear. But if the individuals with the skills needed to implement this aren't maintained or they get cut back or furloughed, it certainly ties one or both arms behind agencies' backs.
That's for sure. On top of that, agencies who don't necessarily know how to embrace even these concepts of agile software development are finding that they need to hire contractors to help them manage other contractors. And there's another countervailing issue there, too, in that OMB has said, hey, let's cut back on all the management support services contractors that we have out there. So there are many, many, many factors that are just playing against each other on this.
I want to throw kind of a curve here. One of the trends that has been talked about on this station frequently by Mike Cossey and Francis Rose especially is the aging federal workforce. The SES community averages, well into the not early 50s anymore. And I predicted in 06 that there was going to be a massive migration. Then the bottom fell out of all the markets, and I was wrong. I have been wrong before, and that was the other time. but how does that aging workforce factor in here? I mean, you're talking about mobility. You're talking about agile computing. We're talking about guys that were working with punch cards. So I'm, serious biz. You knew him, Ray. I knew him.
That's right.
Wyatt, you're about there.
Well, I am. I'm not as big a buyer of that notion as others. I think two things. Number one, I think it's a function of where the funding is and how people want to hold on to jobs, and those that there's certainly an incentive to. Take in newer technologies and help the mission. But when you're holding on to islands of funding, there's a tendency to put that first. So I think it's less about the aging workforce. I think the big thing, and maybe one of the reasons why the forecast didn't turn out as planned, is the recession that we've all lived through over the last few years has just made it hard to even for the most talented people to land in good locations. So I think that's been a stabilizing force that's kind of prevented the mass exodus as we once would have seen. I think, to your point, though, being able to attract younger, more talent that's more current with the way society is evolving means that the government will be undersupplied with those kinds of innovative workers. But I've also seen workarounds. If you look at what Todd Park has done in the Presidential Fellows Program and getting individuals in the private sector to come work in the White House for 6 months to infuse ideas, take those ideas, bring them to the Departments of Energy and Education and elsewhere, there is still ways to get those ideas infused into agencies, even if the workforce itself is not there. So I don't think the government is necessarily, it is a demographic issue. They need to be clear on the implications, but I don't necessarily believe that the government still can't make good advances by being a little more innovative about how they approach their workforce.
Yeah, I certainly agree with that, and I usually take kind of a contrarian view because I've heard about the aging workforce and the possibility of losing, half our senior people. I've heard that now for 20 years. And, the government still goes on. And here's another interesting twist on it. You look what's happened in the immediate last few years where the civil service workforce has been under a pay freeze. And yet there is not a mass exodus. People do leave, and there is loss of talent, but not a mass exodus. people. So there are people that really care about what they're doing. And yes, some of them are older, and some of them, and many are younger. And there's unfortunately kind of a loss of those folks in the middle. But I think the government is going to be able to manage its way through it, to Wyatt's point.
Okay. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We will be back after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. My guests today are Ray Bjorklund of Birch Grove Consulting. Ray, the website is
birchgrove-consulting.com.
There you go. And Wyatt Cash, I would suggest you find on LinkedIn. You should find both of them on LinkedIn.
Yeah,
these are good guys to hook up with. If you want people who are wired into the community, both of these guys should be your connections. So there you go.
Thank you.
Wyatt, I know you've been delving into the realm of digital gov for a while now. What do you got to say on
this?
Well,
that's right. I think this has been an interesting opportunity because of the funding limitations, and there's been certainly since a year ago, May, when Steve Van Roekel and Todd Park got up at a TechCrunch event in New York City, of all places, to announce their digital government strategy. And I'll never forget that Todd Park invoked this crowd, and you got to imagine this crowd there, because it was a lot of venture capital people, a lot of young startup folks. The attire was pretty non-Washington, and he got up and basically, in a sort of mock Uncle Sam move, said, "We want you to help us disrupt government." And he was legitimately passionate about trying to tap a broader set of ideas, and much of it which can take advantage of what the government's trying to do. But I think we're also still not quite 100% there in the terms of having a true digital government strategy. In fact, the strategy that was released a year ago had three main components. One was to enable the mobile workforce to work anywhere, anytime, on any device. Second part was to buy government technology for government more efficiently, and a third was to unlock the power of government data, much like the weather services data has spawned whole industries. And those are all good things, and I think that the administration is making some pretty good progress on that. But there was a report that came out in January from the National Academy of Public Administration, commissioned by Congress. It was essentially designed to assess the future of the government printing office, which, as you know, is one of those few agencies that actually kind of functions more like a business than an agency. But what they concluded in their report was that the challenges of moving to the digital age and being able to support a more digitally enabled government, both for operation and for citizens, still remains somewhat handicapped in question. And their main conclusion was that the federal government still is in need of a true government-wide strategy to become more of a digital government than they are. And so, whereas we are making progress, technology is enabling many things. The mobile development is also helping make information much more available to many more people. There's a still fundamental need for coordination and direction on the part of the government. So I think that's one of the things that I'm going to be continuing to look at this year. I think others need to as well. And in one way, the budget crunch for government could be the change agent that helps make this happen, whereas it was easy not to push that previously. And so this could be the change agent we need. We'll have to see. But I think it's critical for, if we're going to meet the mission needs, that this digital government strategy truly take root to really leverage what needs to be done.
Yeah, Wyatt, I definitely agree that the government does need a better digital implementation. It's nice to write strategy papers, But there is, as I had said in one of the earlier segments, there's a lot of cultural resistance to some of these very good strategies. And so I appreciate, you know, the notion of what you're saying, where Todd Park standing up and saying, you know, we need you to be disruptive. And that is, I think, one of the best catalysts or dynamics that are going to be able to help the government become more productive and efficient using digital technologies is getting a few of those disruptors. But unfortunately, some of those disruptors that I've witnessed haven't really created anything more than a little flash in the pan.
Other than a disruption.
other than creating an immediate disruption. But every time one of those occurs, it does tend to move the ship of state just a little bit further toward a true digital strategy.
Well, it's interesting to note, one very practical and specific area is the whole issue of how much paper is produced. And the Department of Navy's CIO office, I think last month, issued a report indicating that even if they were to take some very basic default setting steps on their printers, they could save upwards of $170 million a year across government by switching to draft quality printing, changing to dual copy printing and black only versus color. And these seem like pretty inconsequential steps, but because of the scale, because of the inertia in government, there still is a huge amount of waste there alone. And that's just one small example of if we could get agencies to move to tablets and other devices, there would be certainly a number of opportunities to save and redeploy IT dollars.
Well, the you brought up print, which is intriguing because I know a bit about that side of things. Managed print services offered by companies like Xerox bring to the table not simply cost savings, but secure mobile abilities and fairly significant green savings along the way. So these are, you know, they seem incremental, but the first, quote, managed print services, Ray, you may remember some of this. There was a program in the 80s and early 90s run by GSA called the Cooperative Administrative Support Program, CASUS, where there was a geographic cluster of governmental activity. They actually shared administrative support services, mail distribution, and one agency would take the lead on print. So they would all share a print center. And it was a paper copy kind of gig, but it saved real money. So these things, you know, they've been there for a while, but I'm glad you brought up print because actually it's a piece of technology I know a little bit about, which is rare. My current phone has more computing capability than my first computer,
right,
but I have to get my 16-year-old to show me how to use it. So, but this, you know, the digital side of thing brings me to what we're going to be discussing for the last 2 minutes of this segment and the final segment, and that's the migration of the mediascape to much more of a digital platform. We, you know, the publications are looking more like newsletters than magazines now. I remember some of the magazines, trade pubs in our market, you know, why, and maybe when you started at GCN, this was the case. You know, 140 pages wasn't rare. Now 50 pages is rare.
And less in some cases.
Much, yeah.
20
so,
pages is rare.
Yeah, but you know, and it's not that the information's not there, but people are digesting it differently. So, Ray, give me an idea in the last 90 seconds here. Where do you go for your first information on the market every day?
I usually go to government websites, and I know that sounds almost a little bit arcane.
No.
But, you know, that's where the news releases really do happen, and if I need to sort the fact from the fiction or the wheat from the chaff, that's where I tend to go to get that kind of information.
Okay. What about non-governmental sources? I mean, you know, GovWin from your former employer is fairly robust.
It is.
But it's a digest format. They don't generate a lot of content. They pick the content that's germane.
Yeah, and for those things that are, say, outside of the official channels, I do subscribe to a number of daily feeds, which are digests, so I get a sense of what might be happening that I might be missing that's coming from the official sources.
Okay. Wyatt, you want to chime in there in the last 60 seconds?
Well, I would agree that the market has exploded with digests of all stripes and colors. So if you're interested in cybersecurity workforce, there's a newsletter for that and so forth.
A newsletter for that.
That's right. There's an app on the way, I'm sure. But so fundamentally, though, there are the other sources that are out there, I think, are certain bloggers primarily promoting what they're hearing and seeing via Twitter. Has been an interesting evolution, especially for those of us in the news business. The newsletters are good at incorporating the headlines of the previous day or the same day. Twitter tends to identify things that are coming up today or tomorrow to be on the lookout for. So if you're in the news business, that becomes valuable. But I think in the end, it's still the online sites of some of the major specialized media, because they're doing a good job of filtering and analyzing that the aggregating.
Hold that thought. We're going to get to that after the break. You're listening to Amtower Off Center on Federal News Radio. When we come back, we will be talking about the changing mediascape in our market. You're listening to Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Amtower Off Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guests today are Ray Bjorklund. Ray is the founder and principal of Birch Grove Consulting. Find him at birchgrove-consulting.com. Wyatt Cash is an award-winning journalist, editor, and you can find him on LinkedIn. You find both of them on LinkedIn. We're going to touch on LinkedIn in just a minute. But right now, I want to know where you guys, what's your top two or three or four information sources, non-government? I mean, EPUBs, blogs, whatever. Ray, give us a start.
Washington Post. And again, I'm not throwing rocks.
I read the comics.
Yeah, I'm not throwing rocks at any one of these or trying to put anyone on a pedestal. But you know, you asked for some samplings. Fed News Radio. I mean, their website does have quite a bit of information that's fairly current. Washington Business Journal and the 1105 Group in general is pretty good about keeping up with those trends and, you know, precisely what's happening in many cases behind the scene.
Okay. What?
Well, I when it comes to news and keeping up with the daily activities, it's a combination of the Washington Post, less the Washington Business Journal, but I do pay attention to that. The some of the specialty publications like NextGov and Government Executive and my old alma mater, Government Computer News and Federal Computer Week. But I also look at a variety of other kinds of sources. I look at news feeds or RSS feeds that I've set up that come in from the CIO Council. I look at sites similar to that, the Center for Strategic and International Studies. It does a lot on cybersecurity, issues a number of interesting reports. And there I'm looking at more insightful responses to what's going on, because there's no shortage of news gathering that we could get. So those are among some of them. There's some other specialty sites that also come out. Tech America has a pretty decent daily aggregate of news that is helpful to me. Occasionally I do get into Bloomberg Government, and they have some interesting reports. And there's some smaller emerging areas that I'm seeing. One, Market Connections, which does research.
Fed Connects blog, yeah.
And there's also Fed Connections and a few others that are trying to provide as much information for their clients as to the general public. But it's interesting that with the internet today, they can resemble pretty closely what some of the more traditional media offers.
Yeah, and then you have the e-newsletters like the Fierce IT publications.
Yes, they do a good job.
Yeah, they do a very good job. so let me take this a different direction digitally, if you will. Both of you have referenced social networking. Which social networking platforms do you use?
Well, I'll take a start at that. I certainly use Twitter and LinkedIn most. I've really spent a lot less time on Facebook, but that's partly because I'm focused on a business-to-business community where I'm looking at reaching certain kinds of executives that I don't think generally say a lot or read a lot on Facebook. With Twitter, it's a combination of information intake and also the opportunity to build relations to a much broader audience by sharing what I'm hearing or seeing and learning the art of how to engage at that level in 140 characters or less. The LinkedIn model is one that's perhaps most intriguing to me because I see LinkedIn emerging as more of a media play than most people might appreciate. The ability to obviously populate and share your resume information and connections is certainly a powerful part of what LinkedIn does. And for I can honestly say I got my job at AOL through LinkedIn because that's how they found me. But I think the important thing that's changing is more and more executives, I think, are coming to appreciate the power of bouncing ideas off of peers that they can readily identify through their LinkedIn connection or through their discussion groups that they join. So what happens now is that if they want to buy some technology, what are you hearing about, say, the new Windows 8 and how the implementation's going, there's a number of people that you could reach out to conveniently through LinkedIn, as well as that there's articles that are being available on LinkedIn's site that make it more of a news tool as well. So I think they have a ways to go, but I do believe that they are going to become a more powerful force in our daily reading and information gathering and sharing. So I think the trick now for executives is to look past whether or not your resume is up to date and seeing how you can really do a better job at your job through what LinkedIn offers.
Yeah, before I let Ray jump in, during their last quarterly report, the CEO of LinkedIn announced that content was their next big push. And when LinkedIn makes a big push, it's going to have impact. Ray, social media.
I'm a bit more of a dinosaur than either of you because I don't really engage that much in social media. LinkedIn, I do find on a business-to-business basis to be a great platform, much as Wyatt was describing. Twitter does have some interesting things to say, to communicate to me, but it's not something that I follow every day because I'm looking for more of not the chatter, but the truth. And yes, you do find truth on social media sites, but it isn't necessarily the whole truth or precise truth. And that's why I find, you know, looking at some even contrarian views like, you know, Glassdoor.com, which can tell me something about a company, you know, whether or not you want to accept, again, those kinds of statements as truth, whether they're criticisms or kudos, but they do give you some indication there. So there are other things out there besides the major channels of social media.
Okay. That gives me a segue to say you should attend my LinkedIn Black Belt workshop because you, especially someone like you, needs to be leveraging this, and people need to know that they can access you in a much broader community because inside the Beltway, you are a very known commodity. There's a lot of money outside the Beltway, Ray, that should be coming your way. So, final thoughts, 30 seconds each. Ray Mann.
Okay, on this, this whole point of the digital world that we live in, now I go back to what I said a couple of moments ago. It's really important to sift the wheat from the chaff. And, that is what is so hard to do because so many of our young people that are coming in the workforce live by digital media, by social media means. And are they really getting the truth of the matter? And that's so critical in having the right information at the right time to make the best possible decisions.
Right.
Well, I'll go back to the importance of helping agencies and contractors supporting them continue to promote a true digital government. The potential for greater efficiency is there, and certainly the potential for savings, but more fundamentally, it's the opportunity to really help deliver the services and missions. And one of the areas that I'm now working with an interesting group of folks, and we expect that there'll be more out there soon, is something called the Digital Government Foundation. And it's really just intended to educate folks on the Hill and CFOs and business managers of the potential for business process savings, not just IT savings, by getting on the digital government bandwagon. So certainly going to be an important trend for the year, and one I'll continue to be pushing.
Okay, gentlemen, thank you so much for joining me today. This is not my day job. If your company or if you need LinkedIn training, I do a public seminar called the LinkedIn Black Belt Workshop. I also teach LinkedIn for GovCon at Capital College as part of the Government Market Master Program. We do company training as well. LinkedIn is a major, major tool in this market, and it is growing. If you want information, drop me a line at mark@federaldirect.net. And thank you for listening to AmTower Off Center.
You've been listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. AmTower Off Center, Monday afternoons at noon, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.